Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul with your host, Dr. Valerie N. Parker, businesswoman, author, speaker, and life coach. Dr. Parker is the president of Arise by VMP, which is a speakers bureau and public relations company. She is also the visionary and founder of the Soul of a Woman Foundation that brings awareness to domestic violence and children living in single-parent homes. Hot Topics from the Soul is a virtual lifeline to the community, discussing social and political issues, relationships, finances, motivation, and inspiration. For information regarding products, services, and resources, visit www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. That's www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I now present to you your host, Dr. Valerie Parker.
Well, good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm so delighted to be here with you this evening. We have an amazing show. I have my co-host, Shirley Carter. Are you there?
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us this evening. And yes, it's going to be an amazing show. I'm excited. I'm very excited about it, Val. So,
yes, I have known the first guest, Evelyn, the Heart Lady, for a numerous amount of years. She's a marriage, family, and child therapist. She's a phenomenal author and speaker, and she's also a radio host personality on there. And Evelyn, are you there?
I'm here.
Thank you.
How
so
are
much
you?
For joining.
Thank you.
I'm super fantastic because I know, you know, this is going to be one of those shows where people are going to want to replay it and replay it and replay it because it's going to be so much wealth of information. I also have joining with me Patricia Johnson, who's the author of A Walking Miracle. I had the opportunity to meet her on Sunday, and I tell you, she is just, I immediately just gravitated to her. She is such a phenomenal woman, and she's going to tell you more about her book, A Walking Miracle. Patricia, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
Well, we're going to start the show, and Evelyn, the Heart Lady, you know, one of the things that we've been told is our hair is our glory and that the mind is a terrible thing to waste. One of the things that Maya Angelou said was that she's learned that we shouldn't go through life with the catcher's mitt on both hands. We need to be able to throw something back. And that's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to empower individuals because, you know, we're the most extraordinary creatures on the planet, but yet we go through so much adversity. You know that I'm a domestic violence advocate, and you know, this is domestic violence as well as Cancer Awareness Month now. They have two powerful struggles going on in the same month. It's like almost like a tug of war. You know, you're trying to attend cancer events and domestic violence event, and they're all very vital to our community because it's a holy hush. I remember when individuals first talked about cancer, it was like a taboo. You know, if you heard somebody had cancer, it was like you can't drink the water, you don't eat after them, and if they use the bathroom, sanitize it. But so much has progressed, so much has changed. We've become enlightening and about how to handle situations as that. Now, Evelyn, you do Heart Talk as your radio show. And we were talking a couple of weeks ago about our glory, how God uses us to shine light in the universe. Can you elaborate on that, please?
Well, I started off by saying that when we talk about our hair is our glory, my personal experience with alopecia, having lost my hair, starting to use it at a very young age, and that was my identity growing up as the girl with the long, pretty hair and the pretty smile, and you know. And I jokingly say, as I got older, I began to lose all of that—my teeth and my hair and all kinds of things were going on. But the glory, I realized, and as I share, first of all, the crown, when we talk about that, is something that's visible that gives people an indication. You know, as I said, my hair was my identity. People said, you know, what they are. So if someone sees you with a crown on, they automatically expect that you're someone of honor, of respect, and of value. And if you're not wearing the crown, you can still be the same person that you were on the inside, but you can still acknowledge and walk in your own glory, in your own honor, and in your value and respect, and especially in the spiritual realm when we talk about, you know, walking in the glory of God and the Holy Spirit, we can speak of that is within us always. So that's where I really make the distinction. And it's a very eye-opening experience is for some of us, and most of us, it's a process. And so it's not even just a matter of, you know, the issue of whatever you're dealing with at the moment. It's whatever we experience in life. So even though my experience was not life-threatening, as domestic violence or breast cancer could be, it was still threatening to my sense of who I was. It was threatening to my identity. And I had to find the honor without my crown.
Right, and you had an experience where it prompted you to be able to walk out in public with your head up high in dignity without wearing a wig.
Yes, and it's been 2 years now. I jokingly said on the 4th of July, I decided I was declaring my independence from hair pieces, wigs, scarves, anything I didn't want to do by choice, that I wouldn't consider it a necessity. So July 3rd of 2012, I decided that I, for sure, that time was going to just shave my head and go wearing the bald look. And I basically called it a shaven look rather than bald, because for me, it's a matter of taking choice and power and making a decision. Rather than going bald, I was choosing to shave. And mm-hmm. So for me, that was very important. But that was a long process leading up to that. I started losing my hair in the crown of my head probably in my early 20s when I was in college. And so I really make the parallel to hold the whole stages of loss. First, there was denial. Oh, it can't be coming out. It's just like a little thin, or, you know, maybe you're just stressed out. Maybe, you know, the oil that you're using. So I did a whole lot of things to try to, you know, cover that up. And then as it became more obvious, as I'm, you know, going in my late 20s and my 30s, it was like, okay, this is not supposed to be me. Why is this happening to me? And it just, you know, continued to progress. So I said, you know, in the bargaining stages, I cut my hair, I would wear it short, I would layer it, I would, then the curl came in, I did the curl because it looked like it would be a little bit more fluffed. So I did all these different things trying to, you know, make it look like I wasn't losing my hair. But with that, there was a sense of, oh gosh, what's going to happen? You know, people know me as this, and we know that pretty much in the African-American community, you know, hair is a big deal, especially if you can grow it yourself. So it would grow. I said, I look like Ben Franklin. It would grow down to my shoulders, but there was nothing at the top. And I just didn't like the way, you know, I continuously wore head wraps and something just to cover it up. I did braids. I did weaves. I did partial weaves. And then for the last probably 8 to 10 years, I wore wigs. And one day I was just saying, I'm just fed up. I'm tired. Even though sometimes it was fun, because instead of going to buy shoes, I'd go buy hair. That was my new accessory. But I did, there was just a lot of shame. I felt like I was hiding, me being a really outgoing person and really just like to call it what it is. You know, here I am, what you see is what you get. But I always felt like I was hiding something. And a friend of mine, actually, who underwent chemotherapy for breast cancer, when she lost her hair, I shaved mine off at that point, and he was the only one who saw me with it because, I, you know, we felt comfortable with one another, but I would not go outside the house with it. So this time around, when I finally decided, you know, I don't want to play, you know, hide and seek, and I was also afraid that I was going to get embarrassed because I like to laugh and play and was scared that my hair was going to fall. So one day I was looking at a PBS program, and this beautiful African-American woman walked on stage, and as she was speaking, I could tell she had on a wig, but it was, you know, it was very becoming, looked good on her. As she spoke, I knew where she was going because she started talking about the embarrassment and by keeping your wig by the door to go put it on to go out and walk your dog till nobody would see you. And I just like, okay, I know where she's going with this, and I recorded it. And it turns out at the end of her message, she literally flipped her wig. She took the wig off and threw it across the floor, and just with that action, I felt like I had been freed. I mean, I got goose pimples, and I started laughing, and tears started coming to my eyes. And it's like, I've got to do this. And it turns out that young lady, her name is Sonia Renee Taylor, and she's the founder of the Body Is Not an Apology. And I immediately contacted her, and she walked me through her process that she went through, and she had posted it on YouTube. And we talked, and I ended up interviewing her for my radio program, and then she moved to California, and I was able to interview her for a television program. But okay. She gave me the courage to know that what I carry inside of me is more important than what's on the outside of me. And actually, it gave me something different. And when I finally did it, it's like, okay. And Facebook helped because I could warn people before they saw me because many people thought, you know, I was ill or something. But it's like the first outing I went out, I couldn't believe. I got compliments from men and women. And I say that the first real outing that I went on that was an indoor event where there were people that I would be in close proximity to, this gentleman came up to me. He said, he just looked at me. And I said, do I look familiar to you? He said, no, but I always stop when I see a beautiful woman. And I could have just floated out of there right then and there. And I said, you mean all these years I've been curling hair, rolling hair, perming hair, braiding hair, buying hair, and all I had to do was take it off. But it's been a very freeing experience. And as, you know, we've heard India Arie state, you know, that, you know, I am not my hair. But there is really a transformation that took place. And people tell me, they say, I see and experience a whole different energy and confidence with you as you go out now and as you just carry yourself. And I haven't noticed it on the outside, but I know how it feels inside. So my whole concept is that in our body, mind, soul, and spirit is just as we spend so much time about the body, and not even the internal body and taking care of our health, we look at what's going on the outside. And of course, we like to adorn ourselves, to enhance our beauty, and to look well. But there, that, I believe, can get in the way of our fulfilling our soul and spiritual purpose. And it's like I spend a whole lot less time dealing with that now, but there's a whole sense that I am who I am and that God gave me what it takes for me to get through this, just as he does with any other trial, any other thing that goes against my grain or my perception of who I think I am, or who I want people to think I am, or who I should be. Live it on the from the inside out. And what I realize, my crown is not my hair. My crown is my heart. And that's the one thing that other people have identified me as, the lady with the big heart. And, of course, I got the name the Heart Lady from some of my clients. You know, the kids would tell their parents, you know, the Heart Lady, the Heart Lady. And so I realize I've been focusing on that external part, even though I've been carrying this out, but now I feel like what people really will know me as is the Heart Lady, the lady who has a heart, who can really help me to develop my heart intent purpose. And I am just excited about it. And I believe it has encouraged other people. And just as Sonia Renee Taylor encouraged me, it is my hope to encourage others that our beauty comes from within. And there are many things that we can do that will really help that to come out by focusing on the inside. And so my sort of formula, I always talk about the heart process. And the one is just to have a sense of humor. You know, I was able to make some jokes about something that wasn't very pleasant for me, because otherwise I would have been very angry and very withdrawn. So I would, you know, make jokes about it. But the other thing is to hold the image that you hold of yourself, that you want to be able to put out, to distribute to the world. The E stands for to express your feelings, and sometimes we hold things in and try to put on a brave front and pretend like, you know, well, it doesn't bother me any. Yes, it does, too. But find some place, find a support system, and express yourself, whether it's through therapy or through a good friend, which goes along with the R, which I'll skip over the A. The R is to reach out to someone. And so I reached out to Sonia Renee Taylor. I also became a member of Alopecia World and have met people from all over the world, not just the United States, just all over the world. There are people that you would not even think who are going through the same emotions, and that gave me a lot of strength after I actually did the shave. And I still have friends that I've met through there and on Facebook, and connecting with people who have been through it, who are going through it, just to validate the experience for you with one another. One of the things that happened as a result of that was I shaved my head in July. In September, unawares to me, it was National Alopecia Month, Awareness Month, and there was an opportunity to submit photos for their annual calendar by an organization called Sisters Living with Alopecia, which is founded by Ms. Stacy Tucker from Arkansas. And I was selected to be in the Alopecia Beauty. I was Miss March for Alopecia Beauties of 2013.
Oh, well, you wear it very well.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you have one of those perfect round heads with no lumps in it or anything. When I saw you, I saw the pictures, and I was like, oh, that looks nice. And then when I saw you in North Carolina, I was like, wow, Evelyn is absolutely gorgeous.
Thank you. Thank you. And it's like, and then there are people say, well, I couldn't do it because I don't know what my head looks like. You know, like most of us don't. But you know what? It's not even about how it looks. It's how you feel on the inside.
Right.
Somewhere you've got to get that connection, because I think a lot of times people will respond and give us compliments, and it's hard for us to take in. But if you're feeling good yourself, when someone comes along and acknowledges you, that helps. It builds it up, but it's good when it's congruent with what you're dealing with. So thank you. I appreciate the compliments. And sometimes it's like, okay, I don't want to draw attention. I just want to go do what I'm going to do and come back. But inevitably, there hardly a day goes by where I don't get some type of compliment or question. Actually, one lady stopped me in the grocery store parking lot one day and asked me, excuse me, what color is your hair?
Wow.
I didn't know what to make of that one. I was just sort of dumbfounded. And it took me, my mind went through all these changes, and finally I just said, I don't know really right now, because it's getting gray underneath there. When it starts growing out and I shave, it's like, uh-oh, I thought that was cat hair.
Mm-hmm.
So I just said, I don't know. So I don't know if she thought I had color on it. I don't know if she wasn't seeing or she just wanted to see what I was going to say. And it's also funny when people say, oh, I love your hair. So thank you.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, or I love your hairdo. I said, oh, you like my do. Okay, I like that. But the other part of the heart is to have the humor and hold on to a sense of who you really are. Express your feelings to someone else, whether they're negative or positive, and finally to come to a place to accept and acknowledge, this is what it is, and I will go forth regardless. I will keep moving. The R is to reach out, and the T is just to trust the process and trust that whatever you've been given to deal with, there is a purpose in it, and there's also glory in it. And I've learned as I'm aging that every trial I've gone through has brought me to where I am and doing the work that I am today. So that is my story, and I'm continuing to live it every day. There's a new chapter every single day, and that's actually going to be my fourth book.
Tell us about your books that you have available and how individuals can get them.
Well, my first book is called It's Heart Work, H-E-A-R-T, Being the Village That Raises a Child. And it's really a memoir about my work with young people who have been separated from their biological parents and that I've known and worked with and mentored, either through group homes or school therapeutic settings. And the first portion is called Entering the Village. The second half of the book is about my personal experience of adopting and being a foster and adoptive parent called Bringing the Village Home. And even just some of the pain and things that I endured going through that process, I never thought that they would benefit me in what I'm doing now, because it was very, so there were some difficult parts. There were highlights and there were low points, but I came through all of them through the grace of God, and now I'm helping other people to go through that. And there's a workbook connected to that called How's Your Heart Working in the Village that has questions to help you sort of journal and explore what happens to you on the inside when you're faced with these situations, from whether they're your own children or others. And it's for anyone who's really considering themselves a part of raising the village. And then the third book is my book about living with my only sibling who has Down syndrome, and it's called Entertaining Angels Aware, I Am My Sister's Keeper. And October just happens to also be National Down Syndrome Month. So it's a book about her growth and her development and the experience of becoming her full-time caregiver, 15 years ago. And it also has stories from other siblings who've taken care of their siblings as well. So it's a really good book for caregivers and for family members, anyone who wants to understand what that process is when you realize that you have someone in your life that I refer to as not disabled but differently abled. And I really do consider my sister to be an angel, because she's just amazing. She can't do a lot of the things that a person of her age would do, but she's an amazing little being. Mm-hmm. So those are my books, and of course the Meeting Les Brown, Ms. Mamie Brown's Baby Boy, which is a compilation from different people that was a tribute to him for his, I've lost track, was it his 60th or 65th birthday? I don't remember.
Actually, you said it was for his 65th birthday?
Yeah, whichever one was 5 years ago.
Okay, yeah, because he'll be 70 in February.
Okay, so yeah, it was written for his 65th birthday. But anyway, all of those are
matter
published.
Of fact, I just spoken with him, and a friend, one of his closest friends that he's known since he was 5 and she was 10, Dr. Lassiter, she passed away today of cancer. Mm-hmm. So he's really going through right now with that, and somebody that you've known all your life, basically.
Yes, yes. And losses, you know, are difficult, having just gone through several myself, but I still go back to the, you know, just the heart thing, be able to express herself and finding the joyous moments. Because when you realize that we're all here, you know, as they say, life is but a vapor. We're here, and there's something for us to grasp, and we pass it on to other people. And the people who have crossed our paths in our lives have been there for a reason, and they have given us something. And if we can, you know, of course, our human nature is to grieve because it's a loss. You know, we feel like, you know, we've lost something. But we also have to balance the scales by looking at what we have gained with that person being in our presence, and what have they given us to carry on, because obviously we're still here for a reason. And I know that, you know, Les has experienced lots of losses. Mm-hmm.
Especially battling cancer for the past, you know, almost 20 years. And, you know, it's just been a challenge, but he's still here. I think God is not done yet.
Exactly. So those are the books, and my website for my publications, for those of other people's books I've published, I've started a small little publishing company, independent, to help people to get started, to get going, because my motto is just do it. Regardless of what it is that you're doing, keep it moving. And so rather than waiting for someone to approve to determine whether, you know, you have something that people are interested in, like yourself, you've gone to do it. So it's hearttalkpublications.com, www.hearttalk, and my personal website is talktomse.com. So you can go to either of those and find links to purchase books and other products that we have there. And, of course, I'm on Facebook as Ms. Evelyn, the Heart Lady Polk, and my fan page is Talk to Me and Let Me Speak.
Wow, love it. Absolutely love it. You know, Maya Angelou said, life is not measured by the number of breaths we take, but by the moments that take our breath away. And Patricia Johnson, July 2008. What was that like on that day?
That was the worst day I think I ever had when I was told that I had breast cancer. And to be told that it was really nothing, it was only in my left breast, and it was only 2 centimeters, and it should be fine, that they could do a lumpectomy. Well, of course, once you get diagnosed with cancer, you have to go through a lot of machines, PET scans, MRIs, bone scans, and I did all that the next week. And by the time I got back to the doctor again to talk about my lumpectomy, I could tell something was wrong because the doctor would not really come into the examining room with me. He stood to the door, and it was the nurse that stood beside me. And then they had to tell me that they not only found cancer in my left breast, but they found it in my spine, my left hip, and my lymph nodes. So I went from a stage 2 to a stage 4.
Wow.
And they told me that I wouldn't be able to just have a lumpectomy. I would have to have a mastectomy. So, of course, I lost it. Because the first time you hear the word cancer, the first thing you think of is death. I just knew I was going to die. And I just started crying. And even my husband was crying. We were both crying. And they had to get the psychiatrist to come in the room with me and talk with me.
Mm-hmm.
And what she said was, what are you thinking? I said that I'm going to die. And she said, no, you're not. I said, did they tell you where I got cancer at? It's all over my body. She said, well, you're not going to die, because if you were going to die and if there was nothing they could do for you, they would by law, they would have to tell you. So you're not going to die. You don't have to decide on anything right now. You know, here's my card. If you need to call me later, call me, okay? So she left, and me and my husband just sat there. And I just couldn't move. And he was like, Tricia, get up. We got to get dressed. We got to go. I say, I can't move. I can't do anything. So he had to dress me. He had to put my shoes on. And as we were walking out the examining room, he looked at me and he said, Tricia, don't you faint and embarrass me in front of everybody. And I started laughing, and he started laughing. So it went from being really, really scared into laughing. And the doctors couldn't believe, like, what are they laughing at, you know? But when I was in that room, a peace came over me, and it was like, you know what? You ain't going nowhere. You're going to fight. You're going to fight this. So the following week, that's when I met my oncologist, and I had calmed down. And, you know, I was like, okay, if I have to get a mastectomy, if I have to do radiation and stuff to live, then this is what I have to do. So the first thing I asked my doctor is, when do I start? And she looks at me, and she goes, I'm not doing any of that to you. I would not put your body through that. And I'm looking like, oh, well, the breast surgeon said that I would need this, this, and that. And she said, well, you got to remember, he's a man and he's a surgeon. The first thing he wants to do is cut. I am your cancer doctor. And before I do anything, I'm going to put you on this pill, which is called Femara, and we're going to see if it worked for you. And it was like, I had another patient that has the same type of cancer that you have. She had chemo, and the chemo didn't work. We took off the chemo and put her on this pill, and the pill worked. So we're going to try it on you and see if you work. It's been 6 years. I'm taking that pill now. I have had no chemo, no radiation. I am cancer-free. I had a lumpectomy. I had 17 lymph nodes taken out on the left side. 2 was positive, and I am doing great.
Wow.
So, yes. And I prayed, and I asked God to heal me. I asked him, and I believed in his word. And so I feel like I was sent to the right doctor, oncologist, to know exactly what to do for my type of cancer. Because if I'd have went anywhere else, they would have gave me chemo, radiation, and a mastectomy. But I went to the right doctor to know how to treat my cancer. So through my journey, I have grown incredible strength that was deep inside me that I did not know existed. I am very blessed to be surrounded by supporters, my family, my friends, my church, that constantly encourage me. I constantly remind myself how blessed I am to have been and found my cancer early, because I am very strongly of getting those mammograms every year, and that's what I did, and that's why I found my cancer so early.
Okay, so you had the test the year before, so from that time to your next checkup is when it had formed from there?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it could just pop up, you know, from one year to the next. So it's very good to always take it the following year, the same month, around the same time.
Uh-huh.
And because it was clear the year before. And I've spoken to several women that this has happened to them before. The year before, no cancer. The following year, cancer. So it could just pop his little head up anytime he get ready, you know.
And you said that you didn't feel anything. I was flipping through your book, and you said that you didn't feel any differently.
Nope. I was
no
still,
ache, no pain.
No nothing, no lumps. I was still doing everything, working. I'm a flight attendant. I was working constantly. I was exercising. Just everything was just fine. And I wouldn't have never known if I wouldn't have took my mammogram. And I was out of work for 2.5 months, and I was back to work, and I've been working ever since.
Wow. I've often told our listening audience that our lives are what our thoughts create. What we believe about ourselves is ultimately what is going to create our atmosphere and ultimately thrust us into our next level of greatness, whatever that may be. So do you think that your attitude and the support that you had around you undergirded you to be who you are?
I think 95% is the attitude. I think your attitude has a lot to do with it. I know a lot of people, when they hear that word cancer, they think of death, they get afraid, and they don't fight. They just give up. But with cancer, you can't give up. You know, you have to fight, and you have to believe what God says, that he's a healer. And I like to tell people that he's still alive, he's still sitting on the throne, and he's still doing miracles, because I am a walking, talking miracle, somebody you could touch, okay? Flying 30,000 feet in the air, I talk to passengers. I tell them about my cancer and what God has done for me. In the grocery store, anybody that give me 5 minutes, I tell them my journey.
Now, your book, A Walking Miracle, how did you come about writing that?
If somebody would have told me 4 years ago that I would have written a book, I'd have said, no, I'm not writing no book. That's nothing on my bucket list, something that I want to do. But one day I was in my kitchen, and the Holy Spirit came to me and said, you need to write a book and let people know what God has done for you. And I was like, boy, where is this coming from? And I was like, I'm not writing no book. I'm not doing that. So I pushed it out of my mind. Well, the following month it came back, and it was even stronger. You need to write a book and let people know what God has done for you. And I'm saying, I don't even know how to start. I don't know where to start to write a book. Well, that night when I went to bed, the Holy Spirit woke me up. It said, take the word family, take each letter, make a word. And I'm laying in the bed like, where is this coming from? F, family, friends, faith. A, attitude. M, motivation. I, inspiration. L, love. Y, yield. And I'm saying, oh, my God, these are the chapters to my book. I didn't have no choice but to write that book.
Mm-hmm.
When you ask God, say, I don't know how to do something, he will show you what to do. The Holy Spirit will come to you and let you know. I had no choice but to write the book because it gave me my beginning to start, and I started writing, and it took me 3.5 years to write, but I got it done. And it's a very...
Well, it took me 7 years to write my book, so you did real good.
Okay, yeah. it's a very easy read. It's very inspirational.
Yes.
I even have to go back and read it sometime myself. I have to encourage myself sometimes. Even though I've been cancer-free for 6 years, it's always in the back of your head that it could come back. So, you know, I have to keep myself uplifted and, you know, just believe that, you know, everything is going to be okay.
Now, one of the things you said right off the bat was that your husband was with you in the office. Now, Shirley was married at the time, too, when she found out that she had cancer. Shirley, how was it with you when you found out that you had cancer, and how can you relate to Patricia's story?
Well, my story, when I found out I had cancer, it was one that I found myself, Patricia, and because my mammogram was negative, but I felt a lump. And they wanted me to wait and come back next year and do it over again because there was nothing showing on the mammogram. But I know what I felt in my body. I felt the lump, and I also had the pain. So I insisted on another mammogram after I received my card in the mail that everything was fine, see you next year. And I was like, no, it's not. I know what's here because when I first felt my lump, I was asleep. I woke up in the middle of the night with a stabbing pain in my chest. And it was like the Lord spoke to me and helped me prepare myself. And I remember rolling out of bed on my knees and start praying immediately. But once I got up, I had a sense of peace. I knew what I had to do. And when I hear you talk about the support that you had from your husband, I didn't have my husband with me when I went to the doctor to get my diagnosis. He was not there when I even went in for my first doctor visit. He was at none of those. And I did have a friend fly in from California to go in with me after I had found out I had cancer. He still didn't go with me. So I didn't have the support that you're speaking of, and that is, you know, but that is so important that I stress that because I have an organization, a breast cancer organization, and I stress that when I speak, the importance of having, if you're married or you have family members or someone close to you, of having that person with you to walk with you through your treatment. And I heard you say about you were given a pill to take.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of chemo. There are so many people that don't get treated as an individual. That, with you saying that, the doctor, the oncologist that you had, she treated you as an individual, not as a statistic, because so often breast cancer patients are treated as statistics because of the clinical trial and what works success for them. You were very blessed
very
to have an oncologist that took you and said, no, you're not going to be treated as a statistic and according to stats. I'm going to treat you with this. I didn't get the name of the pill that you're taking.
Femara.
Femara.
My cancer is estrogen sensitive. And even though I'm postmenopausal, my body makes a lot of estrogen. And what the pill does.
So you're triple negative.
Huh?
You're triple negative.
So with the what the pill does, it blocks the estrogen.
Right.
But what I said, between God and my faith and the pill,
yes.
That's why I don't have any cancer.
Praise God. Because let me tell you, you're triple negative, and triple negative is the type of breast cancer that African-American, Hispanic, and Asian women get.
Mm-hmm.
The only way a European, a white woman gets triple negative breast cancer is that if one of those nationalities is in her bloodline down the line. So you're with triple negative there because there's two types. There's the one that are triple negative, which is the estrogen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have anything with estrogen and hormone and all of that. And then there's the positive, hormonal positive ones. So you were very blessed to have someone to treat you as an individual. And to say 6 years later, you are still here.
Right.
You are truly a walking miracle.
Mm-hmm.
Truly a walking miracle. That, I've never heard
grateful.
Of the pill that you're taking. I've never heard of it. It's something that I talk about a lot, that we need to be educated more about what's available, what treatments is available to us. And so often you don't hear a lot of that. And I tilt my hat to you, my sister, for being an advocate, 30,000 feet in the air, and you're still giving God all the glory. And
giving
helping
him all.
Someone.
It's all about
yes.
him.
Yes, it
all
is.
All about him. I thank him every day when I wake up for waking me up and to giving me this journey so I could shine, so I could let people know that he's still here, he's still alive, and he's still doing miracles, you know.
Yeah. But I'm definitely, you know, this for Meryl. Like I said, that's something I've never heard of, that pill.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, your oncologist, she's right on point.
Yep, she is.
How important is it to get second opinions, or when someone, when a doctor says that you have cancer, for the listening audience, how important is it for you to investigate yourself and find a second opinion?
I think it's very important, because I did. After I found out I had cancer in so many places, I just couldn't believe I had all that cancer in all these places. And so I went to another doctor, and yes, I did. It was there. And for some reason, I stuck to Dr. Krell. Because I think that's what God sent me to her. So, I mean, she's just a blessing. I still have to go to the doctor every 3 months and get checked. So, and I asked her, I say, well, how long am I have to take this pill? Because usually some pills you take for 5 years and you could stop. But she said, with me, as long as that pill worked for me, I have to take it.
Mm-hmm.
So my body just make a lot of estrogen.
Now, how important is a diet, your diet? This is
my
for any other ladies on the phone. How important is watching what you eat?
Well, it's very important to watch what you eat. But I'm not always good. But basically, you know, I try to, like, eat a lot of vegetables and stuff, a lot of greens like spinach and broccoli. I do that a lot. And I think exercising, that's very important. And getting your rest, I do that a lot. I get plenty of rest, and try not to get stressed. Keep the stress away if you can. If you're around anybody that's stressful to you, you need to leave those people alone, because stress could bring cancer back, and you don't want that to happen. So,
and I know sugar is a trigger for cancer. So, does anybody know any other things that our audience may need to know about to avoid some of these cancers that will attack the body? Because there are different types of cancers that you can get.
Well, I know you're right about sugar, and I know stress is not good either. And
right.
That's about the only two things I know right on the top of my head. That's not good.
Well, one of the things, a few of the things that I know about is processed foods. Be careful about those, especially your, like when I talk about processed food, the lunch meat, the hot dogs, and things of those natures. It's best to stick with more, you know, your raw vegetables, your fruits, and your lean meats. Those are the best. And then even, it's also, a lot of people feel like, okay, don't eat any beef, but it's important that you do have some red meat sometimes. You cannot eliminate it totally from your body to help you with your, you know, counts and everything if you're going through cancer, if you want to fight cancer.
And one of the things that's also important, and I totally agree on the stress, I believe that anything that our bodies are susceptible to, whether it's a cold, whether it's cancer, whether it's lupus, which is something that I was tested for several times, and I realized when I came out of those stressful environments, the symptoms went away. But also, what's very important, I think, that sometimes that we do not connect with, and it's something that I think that was probably divinely given to me before I even was aware how close I was to it, was keeping our colons clean, make sure our digestive tracts are clear, and having regular, as Dr. Oz says, poops. But I don't know if you realize, when we take in all the food, whatever it is, whether it has the processed chemicals in it, whatever, if it is allowed to just to sit in our gut, you know, it putrefies. And whatever is like negative connects negative. It's, you know, spreads through our bloodstream. And I always tell my clients, I'm not a medical doctor, but I do know this for sure. And I have a sensitivity. When I get stressed, usually one of the first things that starts to act up, you know, well, two things, my back and my stomach. And I've never had a fear of being ill, but for some reason I always had this issue with my stomach. I always just felt like if anything was going to happen, but I wouldn't call it. Anyway, I started, you know, taking better care, doing the probiotics, occasionally getting a colon cleanse and taking those. And I found out that my paternal grandmother, whom I only met once, had actually died of stomach cancer. And I was like, wow. Thank you, Lord, because it was just something I didn't understand why I felt so strongly about it, and I think that was God's way of helping me to take better care of my system. So I'm real adamant about, and when I travel, it's like, keep your system clear, because when you start eating different things, and because I do not eat, you know, a lot of red meat nor fried foods, when I do, I can feel the difference. My whole system just shifts. So keeping, you know, our stomachs and our digestive systems healthy are very important aspects, too.
Yeah, excellent. Now, Patricia, a walking miracle, how can people obtain that?
You could purchase that at Barnes & Noble and Amazon. You know, you order it like over the internet, and they'll mail it to you. Yes, and my web page is tenaciouslypink.com, and you can learn a little more about me and what I'm doing. That's my cancer. That's the name of my cancer group, Tenaciously Pink Breast Cancer Awareness Group. And I got that name from my husband, who told me that he couldn't believe the tenacity that I had when they told me I had cancer. And he said, you need to name your group Tenaciously Pink. So that's where I got the name from. And my husband still go to every appointment with me today.
Wow.
He's always with me when I get my appointment. So he's been a big help. Big help through this journey.
Yeah, life is indeed a journey. I mean, it's like every day, I say with women, we go through something every day.
Mm-hmm.
Even when we have good days, we're still going through something because our minds are always thinking. We're always trying to think of the next step, the next move. So there is no rest for us who have these crowns. Our crowns are indeed our glory.
Right, exactly.
And you still have glory when the crown is gone.
Yes, indeed. Yes, mm-hmm. indeed. And you know, we're almost about out of time, but I did want to open up the lines for anyone that had any questions or comments. I have a caller holding your last number is 1239. Caller 1239, you're live. Okay, but you didn't want to say anything. Put that back on mute. Okay, and those of you that have your hand up, which means if you press 1 when you tune in, that means your hand is up. And I will cue you in, so I guess those that have their hand up don't really want to say nothing. But if you were to leave a message or word to encourage our audience, male or female, Evelyn Heart Lady, what would you say to them?
Well, one, my motto is heal your heart and follow it. So whatever it is that is causing you pain, find the source to healing it. Realize your purpose and your dream and follow it, because that's what keeps you moving. It's the heartbeat that keeps us alive.
Absolutely. Shirley?
I would say that make sure that you know your body, you know, when it comes to your health. Be that power within you to speak with your doctors about it. And if they're not listening, find someone who will listen. And by all means, find your good support system, whether it's a girlfriend, family member, spouse, someone from your church, but always have someone there with you at any time that you have to get a diagnosis or anything you want to get a final result on a test that you've taken. But by all means, stay connected with God. Listen to him. He will tell you.
And Patricia is a living example that it's not over until God says it's over. Her
right.
first call
exactly.
into the doctor's
Amen.
Office, breast cancer, and then cancer in your hip, your spine, your lip nodes. You know, people hear that news, hear that report. You know, it's bad enough when you hear it, it's in one part, but numerous parts of your body, yes, it's enough to make your knees buckle.
Mm-hmm.
But yet,
right. exactly.
you stood strong. What would you say to our audience?
Take your yearly exams. Do your monthly exams on yourself. Listen to your body, because your body will tell you when something's wrong. And do not try to diagnose yourself. That's what we women have a problem of doing. We diagnose ourselves. But when something doesn't feel right, look right, go to the doctor. And if the doctor doesn't listen to you, find you another doctor that will listen to you. That is very important.
Wow. And one more question regarding that to both of you ladies regarding cancer. Do you always feel something in your breast with breast cancer?
Do you always feel something?
Yeah, are you always going to feel something? Because I've heard some ladies say that they didn't feel any lumps, anything.
No. Mm-mm. No. Inflammatory cancer, you don't feel anything, and it's very aggressive. The mammogram doesn't pick it up. You might just wake up one morning and your breast is really large or your arm really large.
Mm-hmm.
You might see a mosquito, like something like a mosquito bite, or your nipple got a rash. Those are all signs of cancer. So it's not always a lump that you feel. And I didn't have any lumps in my breast, but it was a lump up under my arm and my lymph nodes. Mm-hmm. Who would think to check way up under your arm? And that's important, too. When you check your breast, check up under your arm, too.
Feeling while I'm talking to y'all.
That is so true that so many people, they just go in the motion of filling the breast, but you have to go underneath your lips, underneath your arms, because that's where your lymph nodes are at. And then another thing, you know, inflammatory also, it causes the nipple to ooze, that, you know, you start to have discharge from them. And it's like you said, it's not always a lump there. And then sometimes it does hurt, and sometimes it's just red and swollen, and it heats up. That's another thing it does.
Okay. My knees are
probably
talking.
Hmm.
But I say, yeah, my knees are getting weak thinking about it, but this is information that we need to have, that we need to know, so that we can be more aware of what's going on. You know, we fear what we don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a problem when we do that. We rather bury our feelings and our emotions than, you know, stepping up with our head held high and our chest stuck out and say, I need help. I want to take care of this situation. And, you know, when you have God, you have more than enough.
Mm-hmm.
He is more than enough. And we've ended this show, Hot Topics from the Soul, tonight, but I wanted to leave a word from Tia Sparkle saying, she says, you are amazing as you are, stronger than you know, more beautiful than you think, worthier than you believe, more love than you can ever imagine. Passionate about making a difference, fiery when protecting those you love, learning, growing, not alone, warm, giving, generous, quirky, sexy, funny, smart. We're floored, whole, scarred, brave, and so much more. Be strong, be confident. Most of all, always be you.
Hmm.
And that is the word for you to listen to and remember when you replay this show, that when you have God, you have more than enough. This has been another Hot Topics from the Soul. I want to thank my special guest, Miss Evelyn, the Heart Lady, and also Miss Patricia Johnson. If you like to reach them, they gave the information, but you can also reach out to me on soultopics@gmail.com. That's soultopics@gmail.com, and I'll make sure that I connect you to our queens. Thank you, Shirley. Any closing remarks?
I just want to say thank you, everyone. And my event is this Friday, in Grand Blanc, Michigan. So you can reach out to me on Facebook at Shirley M. Carter. So I hope to see my Facebook friends there. Thank you.
Okay, and Patricia, you have a walk this weekend.
Yes, on Saturday at Trinity Church in Miami Gardens, my second annual cancer walk.
Okay, for further information, you can email me at soultopics@gmail.com or visit my Facebook wall, Valerie Parker, on Facebook, and we will connect you with our queens. Thank you so much for joining another Hot Topic from the Soul. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.